Good day, and welcome to the Primavera Capital Fund III update call conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Ruben Pinheiro. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, and thank you everyone for participating in today's performance update call for Primavera Capital Fund III. My name is Ruben Pinheiro from StepStone Group. Joining me on the call today is colleague from Primavera Capital, Philip Hu, a founding member of Primavera Capital, having joined since its inception in 2010. Philip sits on various committees within the firm, including the Investment Portfolio Monitoring and Management Committee, the Valuations Review Committee, the Strategic Partnerships Committee, among others. Before I hand it over to Philip to provide a performance update on the fund, I need to read the following disclosure. The information contained in this program is strictly confidential and intended solely for the Standard Chartered bankers. Views expressed in this program are those of StepStone Group and Primavera Capital as of September 11, 2019, Pacific Standard Time, and may change at any time. Opinions expressed are intended solely as general market commentary and do not constitute investment advice or a prediction or a guarantee of returns. Valuations and fund performance information is based on current values provided by Primavera Capital, and please note that this call is being recorded. As a reminder, China Opportunities Access Feeder is a feeder fund into Primavera Capital Fund III. Therefore, any performance information such as valuation, which may be quoted by Primavera, will be referring to the underlying partnership level. Gross of any management fees and timing of any cash flows may differ for the feeder fund. China Opportunities Access Feeder closed in December 2018 and invested in Primavera Capital Fund III in January 2019. The feeder fund has drawn 55% of investor capital commitments to date. As of the most recent reporting period, first quarter 2019, the feeder fund has reported a multiple of capital of 0.9x. I'll now turn the call over to Philip to give us a performance update on the fund, and after the update, we'll open up the call for questions. Go ahead, Philip.
Thanks a lot, Ruben, and thanks everyone for joining the call today. I believe you may have received an update presentation, so I'll be referring to some of the pages there. And maybe I'll kick it off by updating everyone on the team. So on page 9 of the presentation you received, really the only update is kind of some internal promotions. So we started with kind of four partners, and as Ruben mentioned, I'm one of the founding members. I'm actually employee number one, so I've been around since the beginning. But as of kind of first half this year, we've had three promotions. So three other founding members who were managing directors, Max, Gigi, and Steven, were promoted to partner. So we currently have an expanded partner level kind of seniority in the firm. So it's now seven partners. And been very, very stable, and we continue to grow the firm. So as of today, we have 40-plus investment for professionals. If you kind of incorporate support and back office, middle office, we're about 65 people plus, with, you know, two-thirds of the staff in Beijing and a third in Hong Kong. So we continue to grow very healthily and, you know, very stable team. So we haven't had any senior departures, you know, since we last gave the update. So maybe just very quickly on pages 11 and 12, you know, you would have seen these pages before, and nothing really has changed. And I think, you know, I just want to highlight that, you know, our strategy has maintained the same since inception in 2010 to where we are today. Regardless of, you know, anything we're seeing in the news today, be it kind of U.S.-China, you know, trade disputes, you know, any kind of challenges that you know, have been going on between kind of the mainland and Hong Kong, et cetera, just want to highlight that, you know, our strategy has not been affected. And we'll talk about it in more granularity when we talk about Fund III, which you guys have exposure to. Really, I only have good news to share across the whole portfolio. So, you know, there has been zero impact in our strategy, and our underlying portfolio companies continue to perform extremely, extremely well, even though we saw a volatile 2018, you know, and volatile first half of this year, actually the fundamental underlying performance of our portfolio companies can continue to go from strength to strength. So I'm happy to give you that update shortly. You know, on the next couple pages, pages 14 through kind of 15, give you a high-level summary of the portfolio companies. And page 16 kind of gives you a highlight of how our past funds are doing. So Fund 1 and Fund 2 continue to do well. If you look at from a benchmarking perspective, you know, Fund 1 in terms of TVPI and DPI, actually TVPI is kind of top 5% if you look at it from kind of global benchmarks. DPI, top 10% for its vintage. Fund 2, a top quartile fund for TVPI. So, you know, the funds are doing well, but let's jump to Fund 3 on page 17, which you guys have exposure to. So maybe I'll just quickly go through line by line in terms of the high-level performance for all the portfolio companies. So I'll start with World Strides. This is the world's largest education travel business in the world today, and it has a lot of synergies with another portfolio company called Spring Education. So we actually joint control this portfolio company with a French fund called Eurazio. They've been doing a very good job of helping to acquire businesses in Europe to help it expand there. We've been helping them expand in China, so we've actually helped them with a couple acquisitions out here as well. So the performance has been going very well in terms of kind of the fundamentals. So just a few examples, revenue up 8%, gross profit up kind of 11%. In terms of margins, they're at 13%, so that's up 2%. So the fundamental performance of World Strides has been fantastic. The M&A strategy has been going well. Just to give you an early heads up, you know, before year end, we'll probably be writing this up to about 1.1 times, potentially, or somewhere in between 1.1 and 1.2 times, just because the performance has continued to be strong. And financial. You guys would have, you know, may have seen Alibaba in the last quarterly reporting. They actually disclosed that, you know, operating income has tripled from Q1 to Q2 for Ant Financial. So this is kind of publicly disclosed information. They have about a 37% pre-tax profit royalty received from Ant Financial. So they disclosed that was about $237 million. For the latest quarter. So, you know, Ant Financial has been performing extremely well. I mean, give you a couple highlight information across its business line. So we all know it from Alipay and the 800 million users that it has. But really the business has been growing very well across all of its different verticals. So that's from insurance, asset management, kind of SME lending, consumer lending, credit scoring, all these types of businesses have been performing extremely well. I'll give one example is the banking business. So my bank, you know, just within the 4 years of its existence, it's done about $290 billion of loans to 16 million SMEs in China. And I think a very strong indicator of its success is the default rate. So if you look at the NPL ratio of my bank versus the national average, you know, the default rate for my bank is about 1.3% versus 1.9% in terms of the national average. The loan approval rate is about four times higher than the national average, where you see about 80% of SME loans rejected in terms of a national average. And, you know, the average time it takes to get loans approved, SME loans approved nationally in China is about 30 days, where you look at kind of operating cost to about 2,000 RMB for kind of processing these loans, while, you know, for my bank, it's about 3 RMB. And I think that's a pretty incredible difference between the two. So it's really a sign of Ant Financial, you know, and my bank and the different kind of ecosystem under Ant Financial that is able to leverage the technology, the efficiency, and the cost savings at this huge, huge scale, which you're really not finding for other similar types of businesses in China. Some other interesting data points for my bank, just to round it out, is, you know, 80% of my bank clients are first-time borrowers, 50% of clients are SMEs, 90% of clients are from lower tier cities, and half of the loans average under $7,000 US. So, you know, that's just one example. You know, Ant Financial continues to do fantastic. And, you know, in terms of the competition, you know, there are really only two players, and Ant Financial continues to be really the go-to player for financial services online and on mobile in China. You know, that they continue to have that strong presence. You know, the next line, Zoox, you know, this is the third leading autonomous vehicle player in the world after Waymo and GM Cruise. We actually went into Zoox at around a $3 billion valuation. The number two player, which is kind of a close comparable to Zoox, is a company called GM Cruise. This was a business that, you know, GM acquired a couple years ago. SoftBank actually did a round in GM Cruise at a $19.5 billion valuation. So this is our closest comp to Zoox. And, you know, we invested in Zoox when GM Cruise was closer to the valuation where we went in for Zoox. So, you know, not to say too much, but, you know, with its closest comp, you know, at many multiples larger than where we went in, you know, I think it's fair to say that we expect good things for subsequent rounds for this company. Zoye Bang, this is one of the leaders in online education in China today. They're about three times bigger than the number two player. You know, for us, you know, just also to give another heads up, you know, SoftBank did a round after us at 1.2 times our cost. So that's something that, you know, we probably expect, you know, another markup for this before year end. In terms of performance, also performing very well, you know, revenue grew 94% year on year, gross profit at 39%. Again, it's a market leader, and, you know, we continue to see this company perform well. Spring Education, you know, this is one of the largest pre-K to 12 operators in the world today. It's probably third or fourth largest globally. It's the largest in North America by six, seven times. So it is certainly a market leader, you know, not just regionally North America, but globally. You know, in terms of performance, again, it's doing fantastic. You know, the beauty of these education businesses like World Stride, Spring Education, Zoye Bang, you know, as well, is that, you know, these types of businesses are very sticky and stable. So, you know, Spring Education, for example, you look back, you know, at different, you know, global financial crisis, you look at dot-com bubble, you know, the student numbers grew, all the other metrics continue to perform really well. This is a business that continues to grow in any cycle. So, again, I think this is another good example of, you know, in 2018, 2019, regardless of volatility, you know, this company continued to grow well. You know, and if you look at kind of the annual numbers, revenue up kind of 8%, enrollment up 8%, you know, adjusted EBITDA up kind of 18%, you know, this business is doing really well. We created this market leadership, just as a reminder, through the combination of four different school chains in North America. So it has a very good split between pre-K and K through 12 businesses. So just want to highlight that this business we will likely be marking up also before year end. You know, I think, again, confidentially, it's probably around a 2x markup before year end, and reason being is we got in at a very, very attractive valuation. So if you recall, you know, we combined the various school chains at about 11.9 times EBITDA, which when you compare it to all the comps that are most relevant, it's pretty fantastic. So I'll give you a few examples. So Nord Anglia, which was taken private by CPP and Barings, that was done at about an 18 times EBITDA valuation. Cognita, end of last year, this was sold by KKR to a Swiss kind of family foundation called Jacobs. That was done at a 19.5 times EBITDA. And these were both control deals. Fast forward to this year, we actually saw two comps that happened, but they were minority stakes. So Warburg took a minority stake in Inspired Education for about 22 times EBITDA. CVC took a minority stake in GEMS, G-E-M-S. It's another pre-K to 12 operator, and they bought it from Blackstone for about 18.5 times EBITDA. So if you look at the comps, and again, these two I mentioned recently were done this year, and these were minority stakes. So if they're controlled deals, it would have done it, been done at a premium. So, you know, when you look at the comps, when you look at the fundamental performance of the company, and, you know, you account for the different factors, the synergies, et cetera, Spring Education is looking extremely, extremely strong. So I think this is just the beginning. You know, we only expect better things as we continue to expand the business, you know, acquire other school chains, and maintain that market leadership. Da So Cha, this is kind of a leading automobile platform and financing business in China. Again, performing really well. I know, you know, if you've read some of the headline news, you see auto sales slowing down in China. You look at kind of last year, it dropped. It was kind of the first in history that we saw primary car sales drop in China, which I think as a headline number is quite scary. But, you know, you peel back the layers and you see, you know, secondary car sales was double digit last year. You know, electric vehicle sales last year grew triple digit. You know, albeit in the last few months, we've seen a softening in this area. You know, I think, you know, the performance of companies like Da So Cha that are able to operate across the spectrum of primary, secondary, and also financing of these car purchases really allow it to weather the storm, so to speak. So if you look at Q1 and Q2, you know, Da So Cha grew by triple digit. You know, revenue is up in the latest quarter 150%. So I think, again, you know, some of these headline news that we see, obviously, you know, not great at first look, but, you know, we're still investing in these companies that are able to find growth in other areas or subcategory sectors where we're still seeing, you know, tremendous growth, right? You know, in terms of secondary car sales, this is the first time in history that Chinese people are willing to buy a secondhand car, and it's very nascent today. So we're still continuing to see growth there. In terms of ByteDance, this is a company that, again, is performing extremely, extremely well. You look at the number of users, it's pretty astounding. And this is just a refresher. This is, you know, the parent of, in China, Toutiao, which is the news aggregator, and Douyin, which is the short form video social platform, and the international equivalent, which it's also the parent of, is TikTok, which has, you know, a tremendous following in North America, Europe, you know, across Asia, you know, as wide as kind of and diverse as Japan all the way to India. So, you know, ByteDance, as of kind of today, they're doing about 1.5 billion in monthly active users, and that's, you know, billion with a B. And just to give you some context as to how big that is, you know, Instagram has about 1 billion monthly active users, WeChat has 1.1 billion, WhatsApp has 1.5 billion, and Facebook has 2.5 billion. So I think with ByteDance having 1.5 billion, I think, you know, they've already solidified themselves as, you know, basically one of the largest platforms in this area globally, you know, not just in China. And just to give you another example of other platforms, you know, Twitter has about 330 million, you know, Snap has about 200 million monthly active users. So again, the size and scale of ByteDance is extremely impressive. And the fundamental performance has been very strong. So as of Q2, it's extremely, extremely profitable. So, you know, if you look at kind of gross revenue, it's up 170% for first half of this year. That's up to approximately 50 billion RMB. And in terms of EBITDA, roughly speaking, they're doing about 10 billion with a B RMB in EBITDA. So it's a company that's doing fantastic. So we're very excited about the continued strength of this company. Lufax also doing very well, and you might have read in the news that there were a lot of regulatory changes from the P2P sector in China. But I think, you know, Lufax, given its best of breed presence in the market, you know, it was spun out of Ping An, which is the largest insurance company in China. It's only one of two fully private insurance companies. You know, Lufax has had the benefit of having very strong institutional investors as its base. So the benefit of having that is it allows them to navigate these regulatory changes. So actually, they've been working very closely, you know, with the regulators. You know, I think if a question is as to why, you know, the regulators have been pushing to move away from P2P, and you know, we can dig into this more if people are interested in the Q&A section. But really, it's about stability, social stability in China, which often makes a lot of sense. And you know, one example I'd like to share is that a couple of years ago, a P2P player in China called Yizubao, you know, they had about $7.6 billion on its book in terms of U.S. dollar. And, you know, that was an unfortunate kind of Ponzi scheme scenario for P2P, which, again, was, you know, something that, you know, regulators in China do not want to happen again. You know, that affected about 900,000 investors in China, right? So even though the size and scale of the, you know, Yizubao versus, you know, it's a different kind of business, but, you know, you look at Bernie Madoff's situation for the Madoff kind of how that was affected, that, you know, that involved about $65 billion U.S. dollar in terms of capital. But that was slightly different because it affected about 13,500 people. So, you know, from China's perspective, it's really about ensuring that the mom and pop kind of investors in China are protected. And Lufax was kind of very happy to and able to, amongst all the players, to make this shift away. So, you know, when they had made that announcement to say that they're kind of slowly moving away to P2P, you know, you look at performance for the first half of this year, it's been fantastic. So, you know, we spoke to management and, you know, they have not made any adjustments in terms of the year-end budget for both top line and bottom line. If you look at kind of top line, bottom line performance for first half of this year, they're basically 48% on budget for both top line, bottom line. So I think it just shows you their ability to navigate, you know, the changes that we're seeing in the sector is essentially, you know, not a problem at all, right? And these regulatory changes were not targeted towards companies like Lufax. They're targeted at kind of, you know, less regulated and less professionally run businesses in the P2P space. So, you know, Lufax continues to diversify their business, which they've been successfully doing in the first half of this year, and they'll continue to do that going forward. And, you know, again, performance kind of speaks for itself. It's continuing to do well. Moving on to kind of the other companies below. So Local Services Co., this was a merger between Alama and Kobe to create the dominant number two competitor to Meituan Dianping. So Local Services Co. Is doing extremely well. You know, in terms of top line, had about 30% year-on-year growth. I think, you know, Meituan Dianping, given it's a listed company now, there's a lot of pressure from shareholders to ensure that, you know, they're not having the same level of cash burn that they've had historically. So we're actually seeing a normalization in the market in the online food delivery and merchant services space. So, you know, while there are essentially only two players, so it's Meituan Dianping, which is backed by Tencent, and the dominant number two player, Local Services Co., which is backed by Alibaba, you know, we're seeing a lot of rationalization in the market where, you know, the level of cash burn is certainly not as severe or as extreme as we might have seen, you know, in the past. And I think that's a positive for both companies, you know, and the market is certainly big enough for the two to coexist, and they're both continuing to grow well. And ours, Local Service Co., for example, certainly continues to perform. You know, I think that will lead into another business, Hello Chuxing, which I'll get to in a moment, which is another good example of rationalization we're seeing in the market in these types of businesses, and the reduction of cash burn. You know, XPeng, this is the Alibaba-anchored and backed electric vehicle company in China. Just to give you context as to which part of the market they operate in, you know, Tesla, you know, is selling cars in China at a premium price. You look at NIO, which is another Chinese electric vehicle manufacturer, which is backed by Tencent. You know, the price of a NIO is about half the price of a Tesla. And then XPeng or XPeng is actually half the price of a NIO. So it's really targeting the affordable market. It's doing very well. Not to say too much, but, you know, there is a subsequent round in discussion, which, you know, before year end, you know, one could anticipate a markup to this as well. Hello Chuxing. You know, this business is doing extremely well. So if you recall in Q1, it was about break even or close to break even in Q1. If you look at the electric bike sharing business, it was actually profitable back then. Fast forward to today, you know, in Q2, Hello Chuxing is actually profitable across the whole business. So, you know, in terms of the performance of this business, we're also seeing, well, them in particular, you know, they've never really had a cash burn issue because they've always operated in tier two cities and below. You know, they're anchored by Ant Financial and also Alibaba, which is slightly different to some of the other names you might have been familiar with, you know, with the likes of Ofo, which essentially is now kind of been pushed out of the market for XYZ reason. And the remaining player in tier one cities, which is a company called Mobike, which is a subsidiary of Meituan Dianping. So given, you know, talking about Meituan Dianping earlier, it's a listed company, you know, that really flows down to its subsidiaries as well, you know, in terms of the level of cash burn we're seeing. There's a lot more rationalization given they're a subsidiary of a, you know, listed company, and they operate in tier one cities. Hello Chuxing essentially operates in a completely different market, you know, tier two and below, and has never had really competitors or a cash burn issue with the likes of kind of Ofo versus Mobike, which we saw before. So Hello Chuxing has been performing fantastic, you know, also confidentially. You know, a subsequent round is in discussion. You know, the performance has been fantastic, so, you know, one can anticipate a potential write-up for this as well before year end. And finally, Danke Apartment. This is the dominant, one of the dominant players still in a fragmented market in terms of long-term apartment rental platforms in China. They're the number two player. They've got 400,000 rooms and operate in the top 10 tier one cities in China, which if you look at the population, I think addresses about 230 million people. So they're barely scratching the surface. The business is also doing fantastic. Revenue is up 200%. You know, they've really reduced the amount of kind of spend as well. So you know, much closer to profitability today than ever before. And you know, really leveraging their market leadership and expanding on that. So again, confidentially, this is another subsequent round is in discussion, and you know, we could anticipate also another write-up for this company before year end. So all in all, Fund 3, only good news to share with all of you, which is great. And before year end, we'll see you know, a number of markups happen for Fund 3. And I think from a benchmarking perspective, you know, benchmarks aren't available yet. But I think once they are, for a 2018 vintage, this is going to be top 5% fund by global benchmarks in terms of performance. So maybe I'll wrap it up before kind of opening up to Q&A is kind of talking about kind of deals in the pipeline. So we have one kind of F&B-related business, which is going to be a management buyout and carve-out of an A-share listed company. I can't share the name yet because it's still in process, but if that finalizes and closes in the coming months, that may be another 100, 150 million of exposure to be added to the fund. But this is a business that that's being carved out is a market leader in the F&B space in China, and has significant synergies with one of our other portfolio companies, Yum China, which is the largest restaurant business in China today, which is comprised of KFC, Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, Little Sheep, and some other businesses, with over, I believe, 8,500 restaurants in China. So you know, Yum China, you combine McDonald's, Starbucks, and Dico, the number 2, 3, 4 player in China, is still smaller than Yum. So the business that you know, we will control alongside management for this potential deal will strongly benefit from synergies of another portfolio company in the Primavera ecosystem. So, so why don't I pause there, and Ruben, if nothing from your end to add, very, very happy to open this up to Q&A.